We're live.
All right. Welcome, everybody. Schaefer Baseball Report, Wednesday edition. We are doing another one satellite from Wilmington, North Carolina, my home away from home right now. Todd Friedman, Blast Motion, Advocacy Baseball in the studio with Andrew One Tool Zeich, our USA baseball guru now. I like going on the website, not the website, but to our email and just seeing registrations popping up every day. It's because we're going to see a lot of talent. So with USA Baseball for us along the way, you know, we've grown that thing substantially. And that's everybody. That's all the regional directors across the country. I mean, it was a tough grind in the beginning because everybody's like, you know, this is a money grab. And, you know, we had to fight that, which we knew it wasn't. You know, there's a business side to it. And USA Baseball had to generate a certain amount of revenue to sustain, you know, in the international world of baseball, mainly because they shut the Olympics down years ago. And, right. You know, they were getting $3 million from the Olympic Committee and that went away. So we built this. It's exciting. We got regionals going on. We have seven now, Andrew, seven regionals.
Between Northeast and Southeast, we have 13.
13 regionals going on. So see, that's how disconnected. That's like I'm like learning how to surf down here in Wilmington. So I'm surfing and golfing, man. I'm surfing.
Still
and golfing.
Trying to get the link for the meeting. Well,
listen, Andrew, did I not do good today?
He did.
You did better. You did.
It
better.
Was a very quick call to get you online. That was great.
I know you guys walk in there like, okay, how long is this going to take? But yeah, exactly. I got it. I got it done. So I it was funny. I was reading my third grade report card to my mother-in-law this morning. It's basically said, you know, he can't pay attention. He dreams too much. And all he likes is physical activities. And the other part was, we've been working with him for 7 months and he still can't tell time. So you guys expect me to figure out technology? You know, that's
good. They didn't have you know, iPads or laptops at that point for you, Schaefer.
For all of us, man.
You would have reclassed twice. Yeah.
Probably. I definitely would have done that. Well, listen, before we get, I just want to let everybody know before we'll talk about something else, but we do have Matt Swoop, the head coach at Maryland, and it's a great story. It's, I mean, you hear about guys that are going back and playing for their alma mater, but this is a lifelong Terrapin. From the day he was born, you know, his family was involved in Maryland, and he's been to probably every football game that's ever played there and basketball game and baseball game. So this guy is, he is Maryland baseball, and to see him land as the head coach is exciting, especially for my group of guys that we have our text thread with that, you know, we've watched Matt evolve from, you know, the ops guy to the volley to the associate head coach to the head coach. You know, that we'll bring him on here in about 5 minutes. I had a great parent moment last night. You know, your sons are born and your sons and, you know, we're a baseball family and you want to, you know, you hope that they can have what you had if they want that in the game. And Dylan has definitely wanted that in the game. You know, and he's grinded it out. Obviously, he's here at Wilmington and didn't play, you know, the first 12 games, which is, listen, it's part of the program. It's part of the process. It's part of where you choose to go and the scenario. And he handled it like a pro. You know, he continues to work hard. He continues to stay positive, be a good leader in the, you know, or be a good teammate in the dugout. You know, he puts his energy and his effort into the pregame and he's always prepared. And he doesn't complain. It makes no sense to complain, right? I mean, what are you going to get out of that? So I'm proud of him. So last night, you know, I looked up and I think it was the fourth inning and I had no expectations of him being in the game. And, you know, number two standing at shortstop and got a ground ball early, you know, picked it clean, threw a dime across the field, chest high. It looked like he'd been doing it, you know, at this level forever. And then had another play with the infield up, dove to his left, got to his feet, held the guy at third, threw the guy out of first. Had a freshman moment where he went in the hole and fielded a ball that he probably shouldn't have thrown. You know, he probably should have just ate it. But you know, I'm sure the adrenaline, he threw the baseball. First baseman made a good play to keep it in front of him. And then his ABs punched out the first time. Second time up, 1-0 count, 100 a fastball, barreled it, hit it just high enough over the fence in left center that the guy could go up and pull it back in. So you know, he got dry humped on the freaking, but it was good. And then he worked the counts deep and he punched out again his third time, but you know, listen, I was proud of him, man. I generally, you know, emotionally, you know, like had to turn my head away because, you know, I had a tear, you know, I definitely did. I could have like, you know, I was proud of him. And,
Shafe, so many dads who, you know, have sons can sit in that seat and see what you saw last night and say to yourself, man, this is awesome. Like I could just imagine with my 10-year-old, right? Well, he's playing new baseball. If, you know, 8 years from now, he's doing what Dylan's doing. I mean, I couldn't even imagine the emotion. So, man, that's awesome. Super happy for you guys.
And you'll have it. You'll have it. Like you said, it's only 7% going to play college baseball.
Yeah, that's right. Right?
So, and 2% play at Division I level. And again, you know, he went into a scenario where they had, you know, upperclassmen that deserved the opportunity to prove themselves. And, I think the toughest part for Dylan is because of the ACL, you know, the surgery that he hadn't played in over a year and a half, not a game, you know, and he was just anxious to get in there and compete. Like the scrimmages are great, right? The scrimmages are competitive, but it's not, it's not putting on that uniform and going and competing against another school in, you know, in season. So he did it. I'm proud of him. You know, like I said, you know, this, you know, that's yesterday, you know, today is today, man. Take care of your business today. If you're not in there, you're the same guy. If you are in there, you know, play your ass off and see where it takes you. I mean, I got to say, Todd and Andrew, is like, when I went into Maryland, man, I had no expectations. I had no idea where I was at or what I was doing. You know, you guys know that story. Never recruited, nothing. My father just happened to play for Jackson, you know, can run, he can field, and he can throw. You'll knock the bat out of his hands. And, I just went and played baseball. That's all I wanted to do. And I think that's a big piece that it's kind of disappointing along the way, because these kids just don't want to play baseball. These kids think that they have to be somewhere to be something special. But, you know, without realizing, like we just said, 7% play in college out of high school players, 7%, 2% play D1, you know, a little bit higher, maybe at D2 and a little bit higher, maybe at JUCO, whatever. But, you know, they're not, you put a uniform on, you go competing, and you're competing for a national championship on any level or any division that you're in or any conference that you're in. You're going after it, you know, and you're not going to get that. You're going to step out and go be a pharmaceutical salesman your first year, something like that. You play this game as long as you can, you know, until they tell you can't do it anymore. Fortunately, I got to do that until I was 34 years old. And, you know, I wasn't going to, you know, I tell people I retired, but truth of the matter, people stopped calling. So I had to announce my retirement, like to my wife. That was it. But, you know, it's, again, it's the greatest game in the world. You know, you're not going to get this ever again. And enjoy it. Yeah. So I'm excited. So, you know, I'm excited for your son when it comes time. I know how much time and energy you put into him. So you'll stand there one day.
It's crazy. And you just want to teach these kids at this young age, so as they get older, the team concept and loyalty and things like that. So, I mean, it's just I can imagine the emotions of Dylan, you know, playing last night after the injury, right? Just not knowing what his future would be, you know, after an ACL. So, that's great. And he's in a great spot, and, you know, he's going to have a great career, man, for sure.
Yeah. We're excited. And again, it's time that you put in and us knocking heads along the way. I mean, when he came out of the dugout last night, that was, one of the most emotional, powerful hugs I could ever get. We just kind of locked in, like, you know, it's another stepping stone along the road that, you know, others don't get. You know, you broke through that ceiling, here you are, and go. So, but awesome. all good stuff, man. So you ready to bring on Matt Swope?
Yeah, let's go. Go ahead, Shafe. Yeah.
All right. So this is obviously it's close to me. If you know, if you guys here know that I am a Maryland Terrapin. I am a baseball alumni, a university alumni. I did get my degree, believe it or not. You guys may not believe that, but I did go back and get my degree. So there's a connection, you know, that I have every single day on a text thread with all the guys that I played with at Maryland. It's a special place for me. We've had some tumultuous times, I guess, with the university and things going forward, and Matt and I can talk about that. But this guy that we're bringing on, Matt Swope, is the head coach at the University of Maryland now. He is, when I say homegrown, home-cooked, born and raised, this guy lived down the road from the university, went to high school at DeMatha, drove past the university every day, ended up playing at the university, had a great career there, some professional baseball after that. And then, after whatever else he was doing, he returned and spent 10 years at the bottom of the barrel, from the ops to the volley, worked his way through to become the head coach at the University of Maryland, which was announced last year in June. And, I went back and I did a lot of research and, listened to a lot of things that he's doing. Because I honestly say, did I dive into the scenario? I didn't. I'm just happy for him. But this is impressive. This is a guy that's built on development. This is a guy that has, he'll tell you it's never been a job for him. Maryland Terrapin's been a passion for him his whole life. And here he is, captaining the ship. And so we're excited to bring him in here. This is head coach, University of Maryland, Eric Swope. Eric, Matt, I call you Eric because we had back. Matt Swope. Yeah, Eric, he is part of your journey, right?
Definitely he is. Part of your journey. He is. He got me back involved, so you can call me Eric.
we had Eric on a couple weeks ago, and great interview. And again, kind of mending fences, because Eric was part of the little bit of the tensions in the beginning, and we joked because when they were doing the head coaching search at Maryland, I was pushing for Mike Schilt, and they took Eric, and it kind of worked out pretty good for both of them. So
it did.
Good stuff.
It did work out for both. Yeah.
So, just walk us through this journey. I mean, you're born and raised right there, right down the road. Your family were Terrapins. You've been to every event that could possibly happen at the University of Maryland. And, and you wake up, last year, and they make a phone call in June. I think it was June 12th or something like that, or 10th, whatever. And they said, can you come in? And it's your job. So kind of walk our listeners through that process.
Yeah, I mean, it's been a long journey. I mean, a lot of people that don't know, I didn't even come back into college baseball until I was 32. So it wasn't the more natural progression of, hey, I played college baseball, you become a volley, or you play professional baseball, then become a volley and kind of work your way in. I actually, went through the pro circuit. I got two shoulder surgeries by Dr. Andrews. I had no idea what I wanted to do in life. I was lost at 25, 26 years old because my identity was tied up in the game. And, I worked for Department of Defense. I went into construction. I did multiple things until I realized, I was miserable. I was miserable every day, regardless of the money, what I was doing, and I had to get back in the game. So you brought up Eric. It's almost like a perfect segue for someone that brought me back into the fold and wanted to get some alumni back involved. And we became so close, and my liaison with the alumni and maybe some of the circuits that you kind of had as well, where I almost went to Michigan with him when he took that job. And he was nice enough to call John Sheff for me at the time and say, hey, you got to get this guy involved somehow. And I knew it wouldn't necessarily be a coaching position at that time, but the ops I thought was perfect at my age to learn all the things a head coach has to do behind the scenes, the budgets, the fundraising, the scheduling, all the grimy stuff that doesn't seem glamorous and that nobody really realizes until they get a head coaching job. So I was actually most thankful for having to go through that kind of route and learn that first, because baseball is just baseball. And that tends to be at times the easy part. So definitely had a different journey. And then obviously all the things you said is this is a lifestyle for me. It's not a job. My best friends are football players. They're, they're basketball players, and I can have countless stories about my childhood going to those things. So it's a dream come true, and I know that's a cliche for most, but I've had a lot of opportunity to go in the pro ranks and coach and do other things in my lifetime, but I would have stayed here my entire career as an assistant probably too. So being a head coach was never the goal. It was more of growing this program and getting the respect it deserves. And that says a lot for where maybe me and you came from, where there was under 4 scholarships in the ACC back then. And we were grinding it out with a 9-team ACC that was getting 7 teams in. So I take a lot of pride in that journey from where it was to now. And Here we are maybe being talked about as one of the better teams in the conference consistently and putting out pros and more importantly, good kids.
It's, you know, the journey that you've been on has been interesting to watch, and the processes that are, you know, involved in becoming one of the top teams in the country isn't just showing up and going. I mean, there's a big piece to it. And I do want to go down this rabbit hole that we were talking about. And that's, you know, the things that you did offensively before you became a head coach with the university in the past, I think, was it 3 years or 4 years, like just in about every single offensive category, you guys set records. And one of the biggest pieces for me in that is, you know, we see power numbers go up, slugging percentage, obviously, you know, batting averages, but walks, you know, pitch recognition. And so in the processes of you becoming a coach, you kind of expanded your mind a little bit in terms of how do you make these guys better and create the and generate more of a physical and a mental approach and a visual to hitting. So you developed this circle and it had two marks on it that created a V. Where did that concept come from? Like, just like wake up one night and go, brilliant. Or, you know, what was the research behind that?
Well, I can't take credit for that. The company is called VFlex. So if you guys look it up, VFlex is actually a company. But to kind of take a step back, you talked about, we'll get into the development and all that. I never talk about slugging. I never talk about leveraging the baseball. I never talk about home runs. I never talk about power. The only thing I talk about every day is swing decisions. Did you swing at strikes? And did you take balls? Period. It ends there. So we give a report card based off the TrackMan or YakerTech every single day. And the report card has nothing to do with exit velocity. It has nothing to do with power. It only has to do with, did you swing at the pitches you should swing at? So the power numbers, the slugging, the batting averages, all that is a byproduct of getting good pitches to hit. Okay, I can't make my 175-pound freshman left fielder all of a sudden hit 15 home runs. We can get down the rabbit hole of exit velocity and trying to swing the bat faster, you're talking to the wrong person if you want to do that. So for me personally, we focus on swing decisions, and that's the most important part. With the VFlex, what it does is it adds an extra electrical constraint to the brain. So essentially what it's doing is it's making your brain work harder through space. Okay. So the key part of that is, and if I could advise coaches in general, is you have to throw balls. Okay, so every round that we flip or we throw, okay, we throw a ball or two, okay? Because what happens is that we get into the cage and put on a machine or we throw all strikes. But it doesn't happen like that in the game. So you can build skill acquisition through myelin, which is repetitive reps, but it doesn't mean you're going to get better at the swing decision piece, okay? So if it's in that V, they swing at it. If it's not, they take it. So we led the country in walks last year. It's something, like I said, that's a byproduct of something we work very hard on every single day on the swing decisions, because, you know, being on time is one, and what pitch did you get is two, is pretty much the only thing you really can control in the box. So we really break it down to the process, every pitch, every single day. And then the numbers kind of are byproducts of that as you kind of go.
So there is a lot of, go ahead, Todd, go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, Matt, I appreciate Matt's social media content. I watch a lot of it. I mean, especially obviously with me being a hitting guy, and I learned so much from Matt in that aspect. And the one thing I love in his teaching is direction, right? You know, understanding what direction is, and, you know, so many young players don't understand that, right? They look at, you know, pro guys and think they have to emulate them. Well, you know, it doesn't work that way. That V model is fantastic. And I actually do that. I actually throw balls a lot in BP. So we do take pitches, you know, and I'm talking about 10, 11, 12 year olds and high school kids as well. But I think that's super important. And I would definitely appreciate that social media stuff, Matt, because you put it out there so well.
Yeah. Originally this was, man, I think like 5, 6, 7 years ago when I started the Maryland Made hitting stuff, it wasn't really to become what the internet has become, with a lot of hitting gurus and a lot of arguments and sometimes more unproductive than anything else. But it was more to give a glimpse into Maryland baseball. I wanted to, you know, show recruits. I wanted to show people we're an open book and what happens every day, and use that as a niche at Maryland to create something different. through that content. So it kind of morphed into something else, you know, throughout the years. But, you know, I think what Jeff is a conduit for me, at least when I first came back to coaching, is he's always been a teacher, you know, as opposed to when he was done his playing career. And I take that responsibility seriously. It's, we're all teachers. So we need to be careful what we're saying, and we need to guide these kids in a way where we are responsible for that and teaching them the right things and giving them guidance. So I take that very seriously, which the internet tends to forget sometimes. It just becomes about the person. So I'm always happy to try to, I'm not always going to be right, you know, and that's for sure. And I'm going to make mistakes. But that's the beauty of when you're open and willing to have good conversations, that we can all grow from that.
Awesome. So a big piece of all this is communication, right? It's convincing, you know, players that are coming. One, Maryland has become a huge developmental program. So the guys that you're bringing in, and we've watched this, you know, we've watched the players come through that, you know, as freshmen, you know, what they were and where they ended up as juniors and seniors and draft picks and big leaguers now. And, but you know, the communication piece, when somebody comes in, a recruit comes in and, you know, you sit down with them, you know, what is kind of the, you know, the pitch to, you know, what the vision of the university is and what the developmental part of it is. Cause it's, you know, these kids are going places to look to get better as much as yep. want to be on the field and play.
So it's twofold is that one, we're going to coach every single player differently, period. I mean, we're coaching the individual. I'm trying to get the best out of them. It's simple as that. There's 16 different personality types. Not everybody has the same personality. Not everybody has the same brain type, how you communicate with them. One guy you can yell at, one guy you can put your arm around. I'm coaching them all differently, and I'm telling that to their face. My only job is to get the most out of them. So however I need to do that, I also need to do it through their lens. Okay. I need to do it through how they see things. Okay. A lot of coaches like to check the box. They like to say things to make themselves feel good, but that doesn't necessarily move the needle for the player. So, you know, we're big on trying to get the most out of their lens, what they're seeing, what they're feeling, what they're doing. And development to me is making someone their own best coach. Development is not me telling them what to do and them doing it. It's them becoming their own best coach, period. That's what development is. And if we can have that ownership as a group, yeah, coaching through fear works. It really does. You know, being hard on people, it really works, but it's not as good as coaching the authenticity of the individual. And that takes more time and it's much harder. So right from the jump in the recruiting process, you know, we're not doing power dials. We're not, our net isn't cast through hundreds and hundreds of players. We're trying to keep it smaller. We're trying to have more genuine conversations. We're trying to understand how the person is. So that's always been more of a thing for us, is to take the time to get to know the individual, because you got NIL now, you have the portal. If you're just going to try to get the best player and they're not good kids, they're going to leave anyway. So we try to do that, and you're not going to be perfect, but we try to do the homework on the front end to get to know the kid and tell them like, hey, I'm going to be hard on you at this. I'm going to tell you the truth all the time. And if you don't want to hear the truth, do not come here. Okay. Because in order to get you your best self, I have to tell you the truth. So we spend a lot of time just on the individual, and that's really important to everybody in our program.
See, yeah, I love that, you know, you're talking about that. We built our organization based on positive construction, constructive positive, right? So there's approach. One, you know, communication is key to know where you're at in the scenario. You got 40 guys that you have to manage, really, 40 personalities, 16 personalities through 40 different guys. Not easy. So, you know, that process, but so communication is key. How are you handling, you know, you're an associate, you're an assistant, you're an associate. Now you're the head guy, and now it's the umbrella. And it's not like, okay, I can specifically do certain things. Now it's all encompassing. And, you know, how are you handling, you know, the young guys that are in that are not playing, right? That, you know, that may not play right away, but, you know.
Yeah, I mean, it's different. Yeah, it's definitely different. You know, I think as a hitting coach, where you're having those one-on-one conversations in the cage, and you know, you're maybe doing a little bit more love and not being necessarily the bad cop, you know, and then you switch the role to the head coach and now you're trying to take on a different role. But I've always just tried to be myself. So, you know, I think we're super involved with all of our players in that way. And it's definitely a transition. And the thing you worry about most is, will I command the same respect in this role being the same way? right? Because you have previous coaches that people have played for. So it's always on your mind. But I think if kids know that you care and you're genuine, then whether they agree with you or not, that they can understand that. And you have to talk about roles. It's something, you know, I heard you talk about Dylan before you came on, and it's the hardest thing as a parent, and it's the hardest thing as a coach, where freshmen just kind of have to go through it, right? I've had two freshmen, I think, since I've been here that have been good, and Lamont Wade and Matt Shaw, and they're both in the big leagues for a reason. So there's that transition period of emotions, baseball, failure. He's coming off the ACL. There's all these variables that, you know, as a parent or coach, that, man, they just got to kind of go through a little bit, and you just got to kind of, you know, put your arm around them in a sense, you know. So it's a very fine line to be able to do those things. But, you know, I think if you have these genuine conversations and you're encouraging and you know, you're really imploring them to be their best self, then it makes it a little bit easier. But it's definitely, it's tough in today's world with the NIL and social media and the portal. It just always seems easier to maybe do something else. And you had talked about that at Maryland. We're just the opposite of that. You know, we're most proud of the Matt Shaws, the Nick LaRussos, the Luke Schleigers, the Brandon Lowes, the Lamont Wades. None of those guys were drafted out of high school. So when you talk about true development, that's our niche. That's what we're going to do as coach. You know, I'm just as hard on a guy that's not playing as a freshman and VP about routes as I am as the guy who's playing. So we take a lot of pride on development, coaching the individual.
What is the focus? Oh, go ahead, Shafe. I'm sorry. Nope.
No, I just, yeah, you know, sorry. Trying to build the players, you know, I mean, because you guys get the product, right? You get the product, you know, and coming from certain organizations, things like that. But a lot of these kids are showing up there not being coached tough. And it's like, okay, it's a shock when somebody gets hard on them, but you know, they have to understand to hear the message through the noise, right? Okay, how loud it comes out, you know, be able to filter through that and grab the message that you're trying to tell, because you don't hate the kid, you know, it's how you coach. You're just, you know, you're harder, you're louder, or you know, you're softer. But everybody has a message. But Todd, go ahead. I'm sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off there.
Oh, no. I was just going to, you know, I was going to kind of get into a couple things, but before I get into the portal and the, you know, and the recruiting part of it is, you know, I really wanted to ask you about your two assists to Johnny and Jimmy. You know, Johnny, obviously being a Winthrop alum as myself, I thought that was a phenomenal hire, but just talk a little bit about your two assistant coaches who have really great backgrounds and how they're accustomating to Maryland.
Yeah, man, very simply, I wanted to hire people that wanted to be here. That's it. I wasn't going to hire maybe a more sexy hire from maybe a larger school that maybe got fired or there was a change of staff or something that they couldn't control. You know, I wanted people that wanted to be here. Simple as that. Both those guys are from Maryland. They take a lot of pride in the area. They've worked really hard with their relationships over the years in the area. And, you know, simple as you need to have respect from high school coaches, from summer coaches, from people like Jeff or yourself. If you don't have that respect, they're not going to send you players, you know? So I needed to have a couple guys on staff along with Tommy Gardner, who's kind of a holdover, who's amazing as well, who played here, of just that being the most important aspect of them being from here and wanting to be here for the long haul. Obviously, you can't control, you know, opportunities and finances to a certain degree, but those guys want to be here for the foreseeable future and love their time in Maryland and are from here and have families here. So all three of the staff members are great. I can't say enough about the transition. It's not easy. I'm going to tell you, you know, I worked with Rob for 11 years and I coached Anthony Papio, and then I was with him on staff for 6 or 7. You know, when you're around people for 11 years, you don't have to say anything. You know what they're thinking. You know what they're going to do. You know what the expectations are. And there's plenty of examples at a UVA or different places that when you have that continuity, you know, that's how you garner sustainable success. So, you know, it's the transition was not easy. Not to mention all new staff members, new equipment manager, new strength coach, new everything. So, you know, that takes a lot. So I definitely wouldn't have been able to do it without them. And I'm just thankful that, you know, they decided to come back home and help me on my journey.
And with the, obviously all three, you know, in your other assistant, obviously a Maryland guy as well, recruiting wise, are you really focusing on the Mid-Atlantic, or are you kind of going outside of that? Like, where are your focuses right now on, you know, looking at both, you know, the junior college transfer portal or the high school player?
Yeah, I think our niche has always been pretty much up the Northeast, you know, from Maryland to Maine, pretty much. I mean, we've done a really good job in the Northeast over the years. And, you know, it's not that we don't like Virginia guys. I mean, I love Virginia guys. It's just Maryland is $65,000 out of state now and doesn't have border tuition. So, and it's a top 15 public school in the country. You also have, you know, the Carolinas we also love. I mean, it's not the fact that we don't want to recruit those areas. We are just getting your bang for your buck, per se. Of where you're going to get the best niche of players to come to Maryland. So that's pretty much always been our thing. We can dive into the portal. The portal is not a reason for us to be good. It's more of a tool. You know, we lost 7 players to the draft last year. We had a lot of turnover. So, you know, we added, 6 or 7 grad guys, mostly arms that give you more just that buffer of someone that's played and had a lot of experience in college baseball. But the cool thing about those guys on the grad portion of it is, you know, they're all playing at a tick higher level. So for them, they're living out a dream. They're getting a college degree, whether it's a grad degree, an MBA or something like that at a great institution. So we tend to use the portal more of a tool. It's not going to be something, if you're using the portal as just to magically fix what you've done, either in a lack of high school recruiting or lack of development, it's not going to work. So we want to use that more as a tool. And just in Maryland, JUCO baseball has never been great. You know, it's also how many guys are going to get to from Florida or Texas or in the Jayhawk League in Kansas to come to Maryland. So the JUCO, we've never been extremely JUCO heavy. I think the more that we develop with motor preferences, which is something maybe we'll talk about, we have gained a niche where if kids really truly want to get better and be coached to be better, then this is a place for them. So we've definitely had that. It's just, we'll see how much the word kind of gets out as the years go on.
So is the recruiting percentage 50-50 high school kids to portal guys? I mean, within range. I mean, are you never heavy on the portal, heavy on the high school, or?
No, it's like 90-10. Always 90% high school, 10% portal. Now that may change. I think last year we got 2 portal guys. This year we have more because we had 7 players to the draft and seniors and things that kind of changed that trajectory, right? And the portal's not all bad. I think it's a good tool. It's not a good tool for people to jump like they are in summer baseball teams and just play for, you know, whatever the sexier summer team is. That's not for that. It's kind of more of someone maybe is not getting an opportunity, maybe sees that they're not going to get an opportunity and still wants to play college baseball. That's the good portion of the portal, or maybe what we're kind of talking about, of a grad guy. But it's definitely should. It's not valued in the sense of like the summer teams. I'm going to play for 5 different teams at 5 different tournaments. And if your identity is solely tied into baseball and doing that, you're going to get lost anyway.
And Matt, we talked a few years ago.
Go ahead.
I was just say, we talked a few years ago, Matt. Well, and you talked about the importance of being on campus. A recruit has to come to your campus to be even considered. Is that still the case?
100% of the recruits we've ever had have been on campus. 100%. That will never not be the case. Because if you can't experience this and you you have not come and actually seen it, that's a conversation that should be had with the parents. In my opinion. So, it's a no brainer. If you can't see yourself at the campus or know what it's about, or, I mean, listen, I realize that certain decisions need to be made on opportunities, but if you look at the difference between Maryland or Virginia Tech and Georgia Tech, There are three drastically different types of schools. One's in the middle of a city, one's more in a farmland, and one's more in a suburb of a state. So, you know, if you don't have that, and I tell kids all the time, listen, you better have a list. If you're in high school, you better have a list of three or four things that you want out of the college. And if you're making the decision based off things that aren't on the list, it's probably not going to go well for you, regardless of the Kool-Aid, regardless of who it is, regardless of whatever. You better have that list, and certain things better align with what you're truly looking for, because that Twitter post or that Instagram post or you telling your friends is only going to last for so long until you're not in a happy situation or you're not playing or you have to grind it out and kind of currently go through what Shafe was talking about with Dylan, where, you know, you're going to go through some struggles and have to deal with that. So you better be comfortable with your decision to a certain degree.
100%. Shafe, go ahead. I'm sorry.
Yeah. So, you know, diving into things outside of just the, you have this, this developmental program, PME. Why don't you tell us a little bit about that? And that, because that I did listen to that 30-minute presentation you gave, and a lot of information. I know it's you're pushing on certain things. What's the reception? Obviously, it's being received well inside the program in Maryland. But, you know, trying to grow that company, because you are part of that company, you know, through the levels, even Major League Baseball. What's the reception there with PME?
Oh, yeah. Well, so it's called Motor Preferences Experts. It's MPE. It's I don't know if I may be one of the more hated people on the internet over the next couple of years, because it will throw a complete wrench into most things that are currently being done in different worlds. But that wasn't my goal. My only goal was to help others. And people have asked, well, why are you sharing this? Why are you just keeping this at Maryland? Because the game is bigger than me. I'll always be in it to try to help others and grow the game and keep people healthy and enjoy the sport, the great sport that we have. So I was down a rabbit hole probably about 5 or 6 years ago, and I was studying brain types to coach my players differently. And I got introduced to somebody in France that ended up being my business partner. And then I partnered with a lab in Switzerland on something called motor preferences. Okay, so I can give you guys an example. Go ahead and cross your fingers for me. Okay, cross your fingers. Now cross them the other way. Okay, go ahead, clasp your hands together. Okay, now clasp them the other way with your thumb on the other side. Okay, go ahead and cross your arms on your chest. Cross your arms. Okay, now cross them the other way.
That's...
Okay, so
that didn't work so good, that one.
Yeah,
it's hard.
Yeah, so I mean, that's a very elementary, generic way. Those are all motor preferences, not something you had to think about. I mean, you cross your fingers, you cross your arms, you clasp your hands the way that's comfortable. So, what we've been able to figure out is the individuality of each person, right? The unique body language. So instead of saying, hey, everyone has to get hip shoulder separation, some bodies don't necessarily prefer that way. In baseball, some people like pronation or supination. So a guy that has really good hands, or maybe someone that holds the line, everybody is different. So we've been able to find a way to find 10 to 12 different categories to coach them specific to that. That's a very elementary way to say it. I've spent 3 years on this. It's changed my life. It's all we do with our players. We have about 20 to 25 major league clients that come in and see me that did not play at Maryland. We just wrote a book that'll be out this summer, and we're starting to do clinics everywhere across the country. And it's solely based on coaching the individual. We're trying to change baseball to them. We're not trying to find biomechanical ranges or forces or specific things for outcomes. Okay. No force will ever trump your own brain and ability to coordinate. Okay. With balance. Okay. So balance and coordination trumps force. So just because you can create more force doesn't mean it's healthy, balanced, or coordinated. Okay. So the guys we saw, Barry Bonds preferred his forefeet. Okay. Mike Trout prefers his heels. Okay. So if you're just going to make Ken Griffey Jr. or Barry Bonds try to torque their back heel, it's not going to work. Okay. That's not how they move. That's not how their preferred muscle chains are activated, and on and on. So It's extremely complex. It's not for everyone, but I am the type of person that wants to take the time to coach the individual and learn that. So for those that do that, this will be life-changing for them as well. So it has no narrative. There's over 13,000 types of profiles. And all we're trying to do is find what's best for the individual.
Matt, are you actually Matt, and doing, you said you're traveling, going to different talks. So you're actually going to be doing that this summer?
Oh, we've done clinics for a whole year. So my business partner from France is the smartest baseball person I've ever met. He was on the, he was a French baseball player. He's a really good pitcher. Anatomy, biology, physics, everything. He is the smartest person, but also being able to put it in one simple sentence for during conversation. So he kind of runs the clinics. We did one at Maryland. We've done other places that I attend, but obviously during the season, I don't do that. We're having one at West Palm Beach this weekend. So we have some online kind of e-courses and stuff as well. So definitely something I'm majorly involved in, kind of directing most of it. And with the book, helped him as well, but he's kind of running more the day-to-day actual teaching and stuff like that.
Awesome.
Is there a standardized test that every player that comes in there, they have to go through a group of motor skills or whatever, then you can determine right from there. And I was trying to figure out the aerial, terrestrial, you know, mm-hmm. piece of that and what that means and how you develop their training program mm-hmm. specifically to that. So every player there has a different program, more or less.
Correct. Yeah, nobody's doing the same drills. Nobody has the same feels, the cues. They're doing different things in the weight room, even to what soles you should wear in your shoes, even to what digits you prefer in your hands. It's the most intricate, complex, detailed thing I've ever experienced in my life. So, yeah, I mean, that's what we're doing. We're training everybody differently. And you hit the nail on the head, even from, you know, aerial and terrestrial. Aerial is essentially people that prefer their COG more forward, more in their forefeet. So they're more elastic, they're more springy. Their ankles, knees, and hips are more aligned. And we've done a very poor job of coaching these people in this country. They're more posterior dominant. So they're gonna prefer more of their back and their calves. As their muscle change that they're engaging, where a terrestrial is more flexion based, more heel, more COG backward, and power comes more from the legs, and more core flexion based. So we've done a pretty good job with those people in this country, training and doing that. But the problem is we're trying to train aerials like terrestrials, and it's messy. And I just challenge people. Trust me, I get plenty of pushback, and that's, I want the healthy conversation, but you know, we have more data than ever. We have more specialists than ever, but we have more injury than we've ever had in the game, you know? Mm-hmm. So we need to continue to push forward in this path of take away just the performance. Just look at the injury report for the past 3 or 4 years and how everything's skyrocketing. And if you look at training mechanisms and methods and places, that it's trending towards a lot of the same things, as opposed to no one would ever look at Randy Johnson and then Yi Darvish and try to remotely train them the same way. I mean, that doesn't even make any sense. Hence, but we're doing that, you know, in a sense. So we need to do a better job collectively coming together and having these hard conversations, because the way it's trending, there's millions and millions of dollars being spent on things that injuries that can be prevented.
It's funny. We've taken our arms and our athletes, and we'll say, you know, take this baseball and throw it as far as you can. And their body will put them in a position to throw baseball as far as they can. But then you're taking them to the mound, and you're going to go, okay, you're going to do all this other stuff, and you're going to go through this cookie cutter type of mechanic. And all of a sudden, things either straighten out, or velocity drops, or injuries take place. So, is that in a kind of a nutshell the visual that you'll see? Like, okay, this is how the athlete moves 100%, and we will develop the weaknesses in that, but also maintain the strengths.
So it's perfect, the segue that you said it. One, you can go train a pitcher, right, with a lot of force getting into the ground off the mound, then go put him at shortstop and hit him a ground ball. Okay. I bet you it may look completely different, or go have them go play basketball and watch them run and jump. So yeah, I mean, we're adaptable until we're not. So, you know, the training environment of how you're teaching them, they can adapt. But if you go put them at shortstop and put them in a different environment, we're looking for these natural outputs that they naturally have that are healthy. And then we're trying to accentuate that, right? You talked about weaknesses. We talk entirely too much in this country about weaknesses, okay? Are they having pain? If they're not having pain, why is it a weakness? Okay. So we need to be focusing more on the strengths, not the deficiencies or weaknesses, period. This is more strength-based. Let's focus on the things that we do well in a muscle chain or all these different things. And instead, we spend 80% of our time fixing weaknesses and deficiencies, which actually create more injury. It doesn't make a lot of sense, but it's what Americans do. It's what we do. We're fixers. So it's definitely more of a cultural thing where we want to fix a weakness. I mean, for example, if you look at blast or you look at something else, we're looking at immediately how we can improve upon. And that's not wrong, but maybe we need to be accentuating some strengths in those features and focusing on what they do well to keep them healthier.
And that's a great point. And I could see, especially at the younger player, right? You know, I mean, you know, we're trying not, just in general as coaches, you know, we're not trying to create cookie cutter players all over the place, but man, just listening to the way you assess your players, you know, from the motion aspect, and they all have different programs. I mean, that's like mind blowing to me. Like I didn't even look at it that way. And so I can just imagine, you know, the health of your players are probably so much better than everyone else because you're training them the right way.
Yeah, I mean, just an example of you know, what a podiatrist do, you know, with your feet, they try to make you balanced, right?
Right.
That's what strength coaches do. They make you balanced. We don't work in balance. Our bodies are perfectly imbalanced. The right. only way we walk and we move healthy is being imbalanced. So if you see some random guy, when I watch some random guy walk in his bare feet and run around and really enjoy it, I'm like, what? That doesn't make any sense to me because I love my heels. So that doesn't really apply to me. But that person perfectly balances and moves around like that in the weight room or wherever else, because that's what they should do. So it's extremely important that we take a wider lens. And if you just go watch a basketball game, watch the difference of some people bouncing like kangaroos and some people more in flexion. And if you think the shoes, how we train them, what they do in the weight room, and all that is remotely the same, we have a big problem.
Interesting. Yeah. Real quick, Shafe, before you get into it, I was reading something about a shoe that's made that helps with that. Can't remember the name of it. I think it was called Squares Shoes. Basically it helps with the idea that obviously when we land as hitters, you know, some players land on their heels, some play, you know, on their instep, you know, and it helps with that balance. Is that, do you use a product that like that? I'm not that exact one, or something that helps you land the right way? Or is it more or less just, cause you mentioned, you know, you give them the right shoes. Like what is that?
So, I mean, if you think about your feet, so you either prefer the weight more forward or you prefer it more backward, but you also prefer it more in or externally. Okay. Right. So there's forward and backward, and there's laterality as well. So we know the four best balance points in their feet. Okay. For an aerial, they probably need stiffer soles because they don't need the flexion. So they use the ground with less contact time. They're more bouncy. Even their tissues are different. They're more elastic. Okay. So the specificity of the person is what's most important. So
right.
It's a very good question. It's very complex, but there's forward and backward, and there's laterality, and you have to understand how their body, just go watch two people jump. You know, one person may use the ground more than the other.
Right.
Awesome. So an aerial an aerial may have more vertical force, for example, right? So if you have force plates in your facility and you're trying to get everybody to have more torque force, it's not going to work. Aerials are going to create more vertical force, and that's totally healthy and totally performant for them. And terrestrials may have more torque force, like you're kind of opening a jar. So they create force in different ways. Terrestrials do it with more mass and weight, and aerials do it more with speed and lightweight. So they're both creating power in different ways. So you just have to be open-minded to, do you really think that Ted Williams was creating a ton of like torque force into the ground, that guy looked like Gumby, you know? And so you just look at the different types of movers in history, and instead of just being, you know, lazy and saying he's a freak and an outlier, we can't say that anymore. We've been saying that for so many years. That's not a thing. We need to try to understand why that person did that.
Yeah, that's a great point.
All right, so that's the technical part. You're finding athletes and making them better athletes to be better baseball players. But you're finding the baseball player that is an athlete. You can enhance the athlete, which is going to turn into a better baseball player overall. Great approach to it.
Correct.
So, I want to talk about you on when you got the job. What was your emotion that day? I definitely want, you know, people to hear that, you know, somebody that's been involved with the university since childhood, you know, to get that phone call in that day and then stand at the podium and give a great speech. It was tremendous. Cause it was heartfelt and it was real. It was genuine. It wasn't a sterile, here's your job, dude. It's something that, you know, look at your background right here. That's all Maryland stuff, right? Bias jersey and Smith and, you know, so give us a little of that.
Yeah, I mean, it was definitely surreal. I really couldn't even tell you what I said in the press conference. I don't even remember. It was more of a blackout moment, to be honest. I thought when they walked me out, I was just going to talk to a few press members and to have the basketball coaches and the football coaches and all the different coaches come during the day at an odd time was super special to me. Guys that I'd, you know, been there with a long time, and it was a lot. You kind of had to feel, you know, maybe last year a little bit at the same time, you know, Rob was interviewing for some jobs and this year. So it's always kind of in the back of your mind, but you don't know necessarily how the university feels, and especially for someone as passionate as I am about Maryland, like you are, you know, maybe sometimes that's not the what they want, but, you know, to give them credit, as soon as that kind of went down with Rob, they called, and, you know, I went in there the same day. I had the baby in my hands on an off day, and I ran next door to the baby, to the next door neighbor, and I said, hey, can you watch the baby for a couple hours while I go interview, because Katie was at work. So I literally dropped the baby off and, you know, drove in there as fast as I could, and then had all day interviews. And it was a lot in a short amount of time, but I wouldn't have had it any other way. This place, both of my parents went to Maryland. My dad was in Sigma Chi here. Even going to when I was 9 years old, there was one usher in the corner of Cole Fieldhouse that, you know, if I just cut off a piece of paper and handed him the piece of paper, he snuck me in every single game, and you knew to go to that one usher. You know, that's how my childhood was. So to have you literally walk the same steps and remember all these things that you went through from your childhood to now, it's the most surreal thing possible to explain to people. And in today's game where there's a lot of money to be made, it's kept me grounded.
That's awesome. That's amazing. So first game, put the uniform on, head coach, emotions. I mean, I say often to everybody, if these different things that have happened in our careers one way or another, if you could bottle up and share them with everybody, you'd be a multi-billionaire because you don't get these emotions from, you know, making a sale or, you know, or doing something like that. But you get these emotions, you know, through these athletic moments that'll last forever. So you put the uniform on, you walk out, you're standing there with the umpires. I mean, you know, I know you're focused on the game, but there has to be something to it that just is, you know, it's another opening day, but it's a different opening day.
Yeah, I mean, you're nervous. I felt like I was playing. So yeah. It's been a long time since I played, but it matches the nerves of like you're playing. So, you know, and then you have so many different things going through your head. You know, what are you going to say to the team that's of value, of motivation, of authenticity? All those different things are kind of maybe going through your head where in most cases it comes more natural. So I was definitely nervous, but a good nervous. And I did take the time a few times that day, or especially maybe during the national anthem, just to be thankful. And try to be present and just say, you know, no matter what, to embrace those emotions. And, the journey that I've come here. You know, I know you want to talk about the cancer stuff, but it hasn't been all roses for me or personally for my family. So, you know, a lot of different things have transpired in my life to get to that point. So you're just trying to reflect in that moment of more how thankful you are than maybe the pressure of the game.
I'm glad you brought the cancer scenario up. Obviously, you know, we've known each other for a while, and you know, I've heard the stories along the way. But in 2010, you were nominated Leukemia and Lymphoma Society's Man of the Year. That has to be maybe even higher than anything you've ever done on the field for the personal reasons involved. But you're also you've also been involved with Kids vs. Cancer,
yeah.
And you've raised over $100,000 along the way. You know, those are the pieces that you know, that I'm most proud of in our industry and in our world, is, you know, the really solid people that take whatever celebrity, whatever opportunities they have to create a better environment for others. It's not about, you know, in the end, listen, we're competitive, right? Todd, Andrew, you know, Matt, we're competitive. We want wins and losses. We want good statistics. You know, we want to beat the next guy into the ground if we can. But in the end, you know, it's what we've done in this game that gives us this platform, and you've taken this platform to another level. So, you know, please fill in, you know, as much detail as you want.
Yeah. Just over the course of time, my sister died in her 30s of cancer. And so I was in my 20s at the time, and it was a shock. I'd already lost a brother to a freak accident in high school. So I'd already been through a tough part, losing someone suddenly, and then to see more of a slow death with cancer rock me in a different way. So, you know, all you can do is try to get younger kids, especially for our team, to get outside of themselves. And unfortunately, I had to do that at a very young age. So it gave me a different perspective throughout life. But we try to stay involved with the cancer organizations, not just because it's close to me, but what makes athletes good is they're one track minded. Okay. They're one track minded. They're very focused. They're on go. And those are great things. But it's also our jobs as teachers and mentors to get them outside of themselves. So we try to incorporate, we have a kid versus cancer, kind of kid we have right now that we've had for 3 or 4 years, and having them involved at the field, you know, once a week or once every couple of weeks, I think is a good reminder of perspective. And perspective is, you know, I don't think you can grow without it. And it's, again, it's such a fine line between that. So we want to get our guys involved in organizations like this. And if you don't get outside of yourself and your identity is going to be wrapped up in baseball, you're going to be unhappy. And that's the hardest thing to teach someone that's 18 to 22. So, you know, we do a ton for cancer. I've done a ton for cancer, but trying to get the team involved in that is trying to shape them into, like, hey, your identity is not in this life, just baseball.
And that's a huge responsibility of a coach to understand that it's just not W's and L's. It's the development of, you know, of the people, the players that come to you that the parents have put in this situation. They're, you know, they want more beyond just, you know, playing time. They want to know, listen, you know, my relationship with Coach Jackson, he's 95 years old. I talk to him at least every 2 weeks, keep our group kind of up to date. There's guys inside our group to talk to him. And that's, you know, that has nothing to do with anything I ever did on the field at Maryland. There's more to do with the human being did with me when I got there. And, you know, when it was time to move on, you know, the tools that were, you know, were given, he was another father to me, you know, and you hope that, you know, you hope that more kids these days will leave their scenarios with that in mind, that to go back and you know, be a part of everything. You know Frank Leone as well as anybody else, and you know, Frank's goal is to be invited to everybody's wedding. You know, he's one of the most grounded people I've met, and I love him to death. And I know he came down and played you guys, and you know, that was a big part for that university. I'm just real side note, and then we'll move on, but I'm appreciative of the big power programs playing the smaller schools out there and giving them a chance to be in that environment and giving them a chance to be and feel those, you know, the experiences of, you know, yeah, we played against Maryland, yeah, we played against Wake Forest, yeah, we played against, you know, and kids have successes in those games on the other side, and sometimes they win, you know. It's you know, I we can't thank you enough, you know, Matt, for being here and opening up. I know all the boys on the thread will start to to pound it. But you know, we've got some good alumni out there. I promise to be more involved now. I know we've had some head knocking moments along the way. Again, through passion, and both through love for the university or the things that are the people that were involved in the university. So, you know, I appreciate you hanging with me. I got to say that to my wife every day too. Like, really? Like, you still want to talk to me? But, you know,
listen, some people think that's the hard part. That's the best part. If you have someone that cares and that's passionate and listen, you know, I talk about this to you from the beginning and other people, this is our program. And if you want something done, you have to do it. And if you're not willing to have those conversations, so I appreciate your passion. I always have. And that's why we've never even had a glitch in our personal relationship, regardless of the conversations, because they've always been real and authentic. And I know what I'm going to get with you, and you know what you're going to get with me. And that's where some of the best relationships are forged. So I appreciate you. I appreciate what you guys have done for the game, for USA Baseball, for what you're doing in your area. And I'm just thankful and appreciative of you guys having me on.
Thanks, Matt.
We feel the same. So, we'll hopefully do this again down the road, and maybe we'll get to do this from the from Omaha. That would be fun. So that's we'll right. keep that on the ticket, and hope that happens. All right. So, all right, man. Well, we appreciate it, and Matt will be in touch. Thank you so much.
Thank Matt. Good luck this weekend. Right.
Okay. Thank you.
All right. Yep. So, all right.
Yeah. That was great.
Man. That was a little bit emotional, you know. I mean, I've had some tensions there with the university and, you know, the program and things like that. But you know, Matt has been one of the guys who wasn't afraid to step up and have an engaging a conversation with me.
You ever hear the term right man, right spot? Well, he's the right man, right spot.
Yeah,
you know,
go back and look. I mean, I don't know. You know, maybe there's one out there. Maybe there's two out there. Yeah, but guys that literally have been engaged in the university since they were in diapers, you know, his parents went there, you know, it's his sister, family went there. He played there. Right. He grew up, he went to DeMatha High School. It's literally is 1 mile away from University of Maryland campus. So he drove basically kind of through campus every single day. And here he is, you know, you get to put that jersey on as the head coach. Pretty freaking special overall.
I was just going to say real quick, like what he's done there. I mean, he's been there, you know, obviously the recruiting guy there for a while. I mean, I read something. I think they've won like 17 straight Big Ten series, something ridiculous like that. And, you know, seven guys drafted last year, five in the first 10 rounds. I mean, think about that. There's not a lot of Power Fives out there that are putting up numbers like that. You know, he's done a great job, and just the passion you can tell, like that's someone you want to go into battle with. I mean, that goes without saying.
Somebody you want to put your kid with, right? I mean, it's because, you know, there's more to it. And again, I love the part that he talks about, you know, being tough. You know, I'm going to be hard on him. You know, he's going to scream. He's going to jump in that face. He's going to do whatever. It's, you know, the other part of coaches being that way, you find out what the kid's made of, you know. You 100% find out what the kid's made of. You know, can he deal with this? Can he deal with the pressure? Can he deal with, you know, the fact that, you know, I'm going to get on you and not, you know, not take it personally, man. That's what I said earlier, you know, through the noise, hear the message.
Yeah.
You know, and understand that guy's at the helm is just as passionate as you are. Maybe it comes out in a different way. So, you know.
1,000%. Yep.
Take where you're at with that. So, right. Let's wrap.
Yeah. So yeah, we'll just, before we go, let's thank our sponsors, Architect Sports, Advocacy Baseball, for sure. Blast Motion and obviously Strathmore Capital Advisors. Okay. Please give our friends at Strathmore a call, 704-364-4241. Again, you know, we stress the importance of being responsible, financially responsible. These guys are going to help you out. Their website's been going across the banner, strathmorecapadv.com.
Yep. And check out advocacybaseball.com and, you know, and Architect Sports has been a group that has just mended our athletes along the way. You know, we talked about injuries today. You better have somebody good behind your injury that can get you back and in the place you need to be. And, you know, I do want to, you know, again, like I'll say every single week, it's time, man. If you're interested in Pro Stock Royals, Baseball Academy. You know, we're going to start grinding for players. You know, we're not going to really pick up the phone call and call everybody out there like some of the other guys do. That's their gig. That's how they go about it. You know, we have one of the best coaching staffs and one of the best facilities, you know, on the East Coast. And, you know, this is the right direction for us to go. And even gotten, you know, that response from high school coaches that are out there, you know, it's a good move. And so it's ProStockRoyals.com. Check it out. And we will do this again next Wednesday. Looking forward to it, and appreciate you two guys and allowing me to be down here at the beach. The sun is not out yet, but it's trying, man.
It is. Sun's supposed to come out here too. It's been pretty miserable this morning, but hopefully we get some.
All right, everybody. Well, cool. Thank you guys, and we appreciate it, and we will see you guys next Wednesday. Peace out.
See you guys.